Hello, and welcome to The Week. Well, Entertainment Weekly. I'm volunteer reader Diane Salisbury from Sun Sounds of Arizona, and every week I read from Entertainment Weekly's website, which is EW.com. I have a good mix of items, and we lost a couple people, so we've got a retrospective of David Lynch. I'm going to start with a couple articles from their 2025 preview. The first one is Paradise Reunites This Is Us creator Dan Fogelman with Sterling K. Brown, but don't expect a feel-good family drama. This is by Maureen Lee Linker. It's time for a This Is Us reunion as creator Dan Fogelman and Sterling K. Brown team up for a new series, Paradise, coming to Hulu on January 28th. In true Fogelman fashion, any further details about Paradise are being as closely held as the particulars of Jax, that was Milo Ventimiglia's death. So we can't tell you much about the show, or Brown's Secret Service agent Xavier Collins might have to kill you. Suffice it to say, it's a major departure for both Fogelman and Brown, who won audiences' hearts playing anxious but loving father Randall Pearson on 6 seasons of Fogelman's NBC series. Brown stars as Xavier Collins, a Secret Service agent to the former President of the United States, Cal Bradford, played by James Marsden, who's entangled in a morass of intrigue when he is accused of killing his charge. Julianne Nicholson and Sarah Sahi round out the cast, among others. Fogelman first had the idea for Paradise over a decade ago, well before he met Brown. It came in the years after 9/11 and the inherent jumpiness that plagued so many Americans in the first decade after the terrorist attack. I was at a meeting with this guy who's a very well-known businessman, Fogelman tells Entertainment Weekly, and as I was sitting in the meeting, I must have been 26, 27 years old, I was thinking to myself, this is the richest person and the most powerful person I've ever been in a room with. As I left the meeting, a crane dropped something in the near distance and it made a giant boom, he continues. It was still close enough to 9/11 where it gave you a jolt beyond just what's going on. It led me to think, God, I just left this meeting with the most powerful person I maybe have ever been in a room with, and when the S hits the fan, we're all going to be in the same boat. I wonder how long loyalty holds with the people who take care of him. Years passed, and the show remained in the back of Fogelman's mind, even as he moved on to other projects. I grew up with these great propulsive action movies that are about dynamics but have heavy-duty plots, he explains of the story's hold on him. The driving place for me was the relationship between those with ultimate power and the people that are charged with protecting them. I thought it could be best covered by the idea of a Secret Service agent whose job it is to take a bullet for a president and the complexity of that relationship. Flash forward to Fogelman's life post This Is Us, and after a well-deserved break, Fogelman started thinking that it might finally be time to write that story. He just didn't realize he was writing it as a vehicle for Brown. I wrote the pilot script, he said, and when I inevitably started giving it to people to read, people would start asking me, how long has Sterling been involved with this? And I started realizing, in my mind's eye, I have been picturing Sterling, but I've never even spoken to him about this yet. I had already set up the show, so I was like, now, all of a sudden, I can't stop thinking about it, and Sterling's probably going to be busy or say no, and then what am I going to do? Luckily, Brown fell in love with the script and already held deep affection for Fogelman. Dan Fogelman has a certain amount of currency with your boy after 6 years of no bad scripts, Brown gushes. He's been so supportive. He was one of the first people to rave about Waves. He's seen me do a number of different things and not only seen me do them, but made it possible for me to do those things in the midst of This Is Us production. Black Panther wouldn't have happened. Waves wouldn't have happened if Dan wouldn't have said, "Yo, go do your thing." Because of that, Brown continues, he knew that one of the things that I was looking for is variety. I was delighted that he wasn't paying lip service to the idea that he thought I could do other things. Anytime you start off a creative relationship with a sense that the person you're working in tandem with believes in you, it makes it that much easier. And adds Fogelman, there's nothing I don't think Sterling can do. With their mutual adoration assured, Brown signed on to what he describes as a bit of a This Is Us reunion. Pilot directors Glenn Ficarra and John Requa returned to direct the first episode of Paradise, and much of the filming occurred in the same sound stages at Paramount where This Is Us was shot with a lot of the same crew. It was like a family reunion, and that made it all the more special, Brown says. But those behind-the-scenes connections are pretty much where the parallels end. It's a political thriller, Fogelman explains. It's edge-of-your-seat viewing with a lot of plot and twists and turns. On This Is Us, the plot was determined by a series of conversations and feelings. This one has a lot more plot. Where there's similarities is the show delves into a lot of backstories and relationships. Ultimately, it's about families and the lengths we go to take care of one another, but they're very different shows, with Sterling and I being a little bit of connective tissue. Brown agrees, noting that while they're both family men, Xavier Collins and Randall Pearson are extremely different dudes. Xavier is a much more reserved person, Brown explains. Randall's a bit more gregarious. Xavier plays his cards much closer to the chest. He's not a big personality in the same way that Randall Pearson is. After 6 years of Randall, who just shares all of his feelings as readily as he possibly can, Xavier is often still trying to figure out what his own feelings are for himself. It's a real muscular role for Sterling, says Fogelman. Xavier is a quiet guy. He's internal as opposed to external. There's a real young Denzel action hero in him here, a very alpha, old-school action hero. Me and my team have talked a lot about the old Tony Scott type of movies, and Sterling's really channeling something there. Brown's preparation for the role was aligned with what might be required for playing an action hero of that ilk. He did tons of weapons training so that he could look like a trained officer, though he also made sure to go straight to the source. I would actually see security, he details, and because I'm the weird guy that I am, I would walk up to them and be like, "Can I ask you a question?" And then just start talking to them about positions of readiness. What are they scanning for? Does the scanning ever stop? What do they pay particular attention to? How do they know when a threat is neutralized? Another thing that's changed since This Is Us, Fogelman has made peace with being known as a twist guy. Directors Requa and Ficarra have long referred to the writer as M. Night Fogelman, and the curveballs in Paradise certainly live up to that title. I'm older now, Fogelman sighs, explaining his initial reluctance to the moniker. I was so nervous about people spoiling anything when This Is Us started. It was a different age of the internet. It was a bit of the Wild West 8 years ago, and I was newer and so sensitive about the experience getting ruined for anyone. I like television that makes you pay attention and that will surprise you, he continues. I'm at a point in my life, and I don't say, I want this to have a twist or I don't want it to have a twist, where I like engaging the audience on one level and then asking them to reframe the conversation that hopefully they've been having inside their brain. It's such a fun way to experience television. My dream for this show would be that it can occupy a portion of space that doesn't really exist anymore. That water cooler thing. Many of the twists and turns in Paradise will come via the murky relationship between Brown's Secret Service agent and Marsden's president, one that's muddled enough to leave audiences wondering whether Xavier actually is guilty of murder. His relationship with the president was layered and complex, Brown teases. It wasn't always the happiest of relationships. There's a deep betrayal that transpires between my character and the president. At the beginning of the show, they're a bit at odds. And then you go back in time to see how they got to where they are at the beginning of the show. Brown and Fogelman won't tell us much more than that, except to look to the title and its potential double meaning for clues. Everybody thinks their life would be so much better if they could live in this other place or have a little bit more money or power, Fogelman muses. What is a person's paradise? Was an interesting notion to me. One man's paradise is another man's hell. That was Paradise Reunites This Is Us creator Dan Fogelman with Sterling K. Brown, but don't expect a feel-good family drama. And it was by Maureen Lee Linker. Next, we have, also from the 2025 preview, Amy Schumer makes her return to movies as fake mom-to-be in Kind of Pregnant. This is a first look, and it's by Lauren Huff. Amy Schumer considers herself a picky person, at least when it comes to choosing her films. By that, I just mean I only want to do something if I think I could do it best, she tells Entertainment Weekly. I don't want to take on a role that I'm like, this would be so funny if somebody else did it. Enter her newest film, Kind of Pregnant. Schumer stars as Lainey Newton, a newly single teacher who's wanted to be a mom since she was little, but life had other plans. And when her best friend Kate, played by Jillian Bell, gets pregnant first, Lainey becomes jealous and decides to don a fake baby bump, and then accidentally meets the man of her dreams, played by Will Forte, while wearing it. I think I waited for something that I felt really connected to, Schumer says of the film. I really enjoyed doing The Humans with A24 in 2021, but I do think of this as kind of my return to movies, and it's because I was waiting to have something to say. That something boils down to the idea of what you think it means to get married and have a child versus the reality of it. She adds, everybody has their own journey with deciding whether or not to become a parent, or fertility, or infertility, and I thought this was a really great way to explore that. While that could get a bit heavy, it should be noted that the film, first written by Julie Paiva, is a true comedy at heart. It's not your traditional rom-com. It's wild and pushes boundaries while still being heartfelt, director Tyler Spindell, who calls the project a comedy nerd's dream, tells Entertainment Weekly via email. In other words, it sounds like an Amy Schumer joint, and it should because besides starring in the film, she also produces and has a writing credit alongside Paiva, which was a really fun surprise for the comedian. It was a surprise because, without going into too much detail, I think if you rewrite a script, it goes into automatic arbitration and the union reads all the drafts and they decide, and it's very rare, she explains. So I was surprised and excited, and Julie and I are really proud to both have credits together and loved working with each other. We knew that we wanted the same message. Schumer's contributions to the script are evident throughout, or as she puts it, my prints are all over this thing. For example, I would say this proudly as a little surprise, a little spoiler, that there was no sex scene before I came onto the project, she teases. Make of that what you will. Part of what makes Kind of Pregnant such a non-traditional romantic comedy is its emphasis on female relationships. In addition to Belle, the film also stars Brianne Howie as a pregnant woman who befriends Lainey, and Lizzie Broadway and Ursula Carlson as Lainey's hilarious, obnoxious co-workers. The evolution of Lainey's relationships with these women is a delightful through-line in the film. Those friendships are so central to the story that Schumer struggles with the idea of marketing the film purely as a rom-com. I don't think we should ignore the romance, but the takeaway from it for me is definitely about finding love for yourself through your friendships and how much you love your friends, she says. Her on-screen relationships even translated to the real world, with Schumer saying she and her co-stars got weirdly close while making it. To illustrate her point, during this interview, she attempts to include the cast in the conversation by filming a video message to their group chat, asking sweetly, "Can I just put you on it for a sec? Because I feel like they should be part of this first interview with me." Nevertheless, we'd be remiss to not mention the adorably swoon-worthy turn by Forte as the film's romantic lead, a Zamboni driver named Josh, whom Schumer hopes audiences crush on. As for what makes Forte the perfect on-screen boyfriend, she says it goes back to the same reason she wanted to work with the MacGruber star in the first place. Says Schumer, "The reason I wanted to work with him on this was he is, I mean, so funny. And I think he's handsome, and he's the kind of guy that I would want to talk to and maybe be my boyfriend. And it feels possible, you know what I mean? I love that the romantic love interest that I've worked with, you can really feel their appeal, I think, and it feels maybe attainable." Back in April, Schumer told Variety of Kinda Pregnant, "I'm striving for it to be one of the 10 funniest movies of my lifetime, and I think it's going to be as funny as Trainwreck." When asked in November if he thinks they succeeded in this, Spindell jokes, "It's hard to say because comedy is subjective, but what I can objectively say is it's funnier than The Green Mile and Schindler's List combined." As the film gears up to debut on Netflix, Schumer hopes it makes people feel good and happy and vulnerable, and that it starts some conversations that maybe wouldn't have started. "We want to give people something fun to watch that's light, sweet, and doesn't take itself too seriously," Spindell adds. "It's a great date movie, or for a girl's night, I prefer to watch it with my fish in Spanish. The choice is yours." Kinda Pregnant, which also stars Damon Wayans Jr., Alex Moffat, Joel David Moore, Frances Benimo, Molly Sims, and Jackie Sandler, hits Netflix on February 5th. That's Amy Schumer makes her return to movies as fake mom-to-be in Kinda Pregnant, and it was by Lauren Huff. Next, we have David Lynch, Twin Peaks co-creator and Mulholland Drive director, dies at 78. This is by Wesley Stenzel. David Lynch, the acclaimed filmmaker who blended dreamlike surrealism with mystery and melodrama in films like Mulholland Drive and television projects like Twin Peaks, has died at 78. It is with deep regret that we, his family, announced the passing of the man and the artist, David Lynch, the filmmaker's family shared on Facebook Thursday. "We would appreciate some privacy at this time. There's a big hole in the world now that he's no longer with us, but as he would say, keep your eye on the donut and not on the hole. It's a beautiful day with golden sunshine and blue skies all the way." A cause of death was not immediately available. In August, Lynch announced that he had been diagnosed with emphysema in 2020, from smoking for so long, and so I'm homebound whether I like it or not. However, he refused to let the diagnosis get in the way of his artistry, announcing, "I will never retire." Lynch is perhaps best known as the co-creator of the monumental mystery series Twin Peaks alongside Mark Frost. He received Academy Award nominations for Best Director for The Elephant Man, Blue Velvet, and Mulholland Drive, and won an Academy Honorary Award in 2019. His film Wild at Heart earned the Palme d'Or at the 1990 Cannes Film Festival. Lynch's unmistakable directorial voice gave a great sense of continuity across his body of work. His unique and constant fascination with dreamlike rhythms, character doppelgangers, ambient soundscapes, and the dark side of American culture has led critics and cinephiles to describe works with similar qualities as Lynchian. Born in Missoula, Montana, in 1946, Lynch first studied as a painter at three different art schools on the East Coast. After experimenting with short filmmaking in Philadelphia, Lynch moved to Los Angeles with his first wife, Peggy, and eldest daughter, Jennifer, in the early 1970s so he could study at the American Film Institute Conservatory. He spent much of the 1970s working on his debut feature, Eraserhead, which released in 1977 and subsequently gained a cult following as a midnight movie. Lynch received praise for his next feature film, the stylish black-and-white biography, The Elephant Man. The film starred John Hurt as Joseph John Merrick, an English man with severe physical deformities who was largely shunned by society, and Anthony Hopkins as Frederick Trives, a doctor who befriended Merrick. The film earned 8 Oscar nominations, including Best Picture and Best Director. His next project was an adaptation of Frank Herbert's sci-fi novel Dune in 1984. Though the film was a critical and financial failure, it also gained a cult following and marked Lynch's first project with longtime collaborator Kyle MacLachlan. Lynch and MacLachlan reteamed for 1986's Blue Velvet, a graphic and occasionally surreal neo-noir that spawned controversy and critical acclaim. The film also starred Laura Dern, Dennis Hopper, and Isabella Rossellini. 1990 was a seminal year in Lynch's career. His film, Wild at Heart, starring Nicolas Cage and Dern, won the Palme d'Or at the Cannes Film Festival, and his beloved television series, Twin Peaks, premiered on ABC. Lynch directed the pilot of the series, as well as an additional episode in the first season and 4 more episodes in the second, including the finale. The series starred MacLachlan as Dale Cooper, an FBI agent who investigates the murder of high schooler Laura Palmer, played by Cheryl Lee, in a mysterious Washington town. Twin Peaks explored the dark side of Americana using elements of detective stories, soap operas, and horror, and Lynch himself appeared as the recurring character Gordon Cole. Though the series was canceled after its second season, Lynch explored its characters and mythos further with the 1992 prequel film, Fire Walk With Me, as well as a Showtime revival in 2017. Lynch made 2 more attempts at television with the sitcom On the Air and the HBO anthology Hotel Room before returning to feature filmmaking in 1997 with Lost Highway, an opaque noir thriller starring Bill Pullman and Patricia Arquette that further solidified his unique directorial voice. His most uncharacteristic project, Disney's G-rated The Straight Story, came 2 years later. The film followed the true story of an elderly Iowa man, played by Richard Farnsworth, who rode a lawnmower 300 miles to reunite with his ailing brother, played by Harry Dean Stanton. The filmmaker returned to Cannes in 2001 with Mulholland Drive, a multi-layered, surreal drama about Hollywood that many consider Lynch's magnum opus. The film stars Naomi Watts as an inspiring actress and Laura Harring as an amnesiac who are both swept into a labyrinth of artifice, violence, mystery, and betrayal. The film earned Lynch his 3rd nomination for Best Director at the Oscars, and he won the prize for Best Director at Cannes alongside Joel Coen, who won for The Man Who Wasn't There. Lynch released his final feature film, Inland Empire, in 2006. The film, which stars Dern, Justin Theroux, and Jeremy Irons, is another meditation on Hollywood, blurring the lines between layers of fiction and dizzyingly captured with a digital camcorder. It was over a decade until the filmmaker released his swan song, the 18-episode Showtime revival of Twin Peaks titled The Return in 2017. Lynch directed every episode of the series, which reunited most of the original cast and brought other past collaborators like Dern and Watts into the fold. Lynch also reprised his role as Gordon Cole for the series. The return was heralded as one of the best shows of the year, and certain journals, like Cahiers du Cinéma and Sight and Sound, considered it among the best films of 2017, despite its length. Lynch also made occasional acting appearances in other projects, including Steven Spielberg's The Fablemans and 20 episodes of The Cleveland Show. In his final interview with Entertainment Weekly in 2022, Lynch discussed remastering Inland Empire and explained how the process made him hopeful for the future of filmmaking. All the Picture had a new life, and it was a great new life, Lynch told Entertainment Weekly. It was a kind of a miracle to go from Sony BD-150 quality to where it is now. It means that the future is going to be fantastic for films, for cinema. It's amazing what's going on. The Picture got way better. It got more focus and a deeper look. From what I first had to now, big, 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 beautiful change. A longtime advocate for transcendental meditation, the filmmaker oversaw the David Lynch Foundation for Consciousness-Based Education and Peace, which provided scholarships for young people seeking to learn about the practice. He also continued painting throughout his filmmaking career, produced multiple musical projects, and directed dozens of short films, music videos, and commercials. Lynch is survived by his wife, Emmy Stolf, and four children, including Jennifer Lynch, who directed films like Boxing Helena and Surveillance, as well as episodes of shows like The Walking Dead and American Horror Story. That was David Lynch, Twin Peaks co-creator and Mulholland Drive director, dies at 78. This is pretty close to a good time to mention that you are listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona. This is Entertainment Weekly, and I'm reading from their website, which is EW.com. Here's another celebrity remembrance. Bob Uecker, Major League and Mr. Belvedere star and Hall of Fame broadcaster, dies at 90. The journeyman catcher and award-winning sports commentator, known by many as Mr. Baseball, was diagnosed with small cell lung cancer in 2023. This is by Emlyn Travis. Bob Uecker, the beloved sports figure who parlayed his stint as an unremarkable Major League Baseball catcher into a successful second act as a Hall of Fame broadcaster and a comedic actor in films and TV series, including Major League and Mr. Belvedere, died Thursday morning at his home in Milwaukee. He was 90. Uecker's family said in a statement that he brought joy to countless listeners through his wit, charisma, and love for baseball, Milwaukee, and all of Wisconsin, creating a legacy that will be forever cherished. While his contributions to the game are noteworthy, it is his kindness, humility, and love for family and friends that we will hold closest to our hearts. A cause of death was not disclosed, though Uecker's family noted that he faced a private battle with small cell lung cancer since early 2023, which he met with the same strength and resilience that defined him. His hometown team, the Milwaukee Brewers, added, "There is no describing the impact that Uke had on so many, and no words for how much he was loved. We are left with a giant void in our hearts, but also remember the laughter and joy he brought to our lives throughout the years." Born January 26, 1934, the man who would come to be known as Mr. Baseball spent several years in the minor leagues before being called up by the Milwaukee Braves in 1962. Never a star player, Uecker lasted six seasons in the majors, playing for the Milwaukee and Atlanta Braves, the St. Louis Cardinals, and the Philadelphia Phillies. He hit 14 home runs and had a career batting average of .197. After hanging up his cleats, Uecker found his way back to the ballpark in 1971 as a broadcast commentator for the Brewers, a job he would hold for 54 seasons until his death. Endlessly funny, Uecker mentored several fellow commentators during his tenure and could be heard shouting his signature catchphrase, "Get up, get out of here, gone!" whenever a Brewers player knocked one out of the park. Uecker enjoyed success in front of the camera as well, appearing in a collection of Miller Lite ads on television shows such as Mr. Belvedere and in all three of the Major League films, aside Tom Berenger, Charlie Sheen, and Wesley Snipes. He also made regular appearances on The Johnny Carson Show and The Late Show with David Letterman, and cameoed on shows like Who's the Boss, Futurama, and Teen Titans Go! He hosted the TV programs Bob Uecker's Wacky World of Sports and Bob Uecker's War of the Stars, and emceed an episode of Saturday Night Live with musical guest Peter Wolf in 1984. In 1982, Uecker published a memoir written with Mickey Hershowitz titled Catcher in the Rye, that's W-R-Y, Outrageous but True Stories of Baseball. Uecker was honored by the Baseball Hall of Fame with the Ford C. Frick Award in 2003 and was similarly recognized by the National Sportscasters and Sportswriters Association, the Radio Hall of Fame, and the WWE. The Brewers established two statues in his honor, one outside America Family Field in 2012 and another statue tucked away in the park's upper deck in 2014. That was Bob Uecker, Major League and Mr. Belvedere star and Hall of Fame broadcaster, dies at 90, and it was by Emlyn Travis. To go with that David Lynch remembrance, here is David Lynch's best movies and TV shows ranked. This is by Devin Coggan and Christian Haloub. David Lynch is dead, but his dreams live forever. Few American filmmakers have transformed the landscape of film and TV like this child of the mid-century Midwest, who also became a peerless poet of the Los Angeles Dream Factory. Lynch's work has been staggeringly influential in shaping our perceptions of this vast country. His greatness has been recognized by no less an authority than Steven Spielberg, who recently cast him to play another great director, John Ford, in The Fabelmans. 6 years after Twin Peaks, The Return arrived to put every other 21st century TV revival to shame, it now stands as his final artistic statement. As a testament to Lynch's extraordinary oeuvre, here is Entertainment Weekly's ranking of the director's best feature films and full-length TV shows, excluding his short films, commercials, and short-lived TV projects, Hotel Room, and On the Air, which remain hard to see even in this age of streaming. So we have a list of 12 here. Number 12 from 1984, Dune. Even in David Lynch's most flawed movie, there are a lot of things to like. The filmmaker syncs up with the psychedelic elements of Dune to the degree that its influence on his subsequent films, though understated, is widespread. The Sleeper Must Awaken could apply equally well to the protagonists of Blue Velvet and Mulholland Drive. The incredible opening scene with the Guild Navigator floating in that giant tank is unlike anything yet seen in Denis Villeneuve's more recent adaptation of Frank Herbert's classic sci-fi novel, but trying to shove it all into 2.5 hours was undoubtedly a mistake. We can watch Lynch's version of Dune on Netflix. Wild at Heart is our number 11 from 1990. Like many Lynch films, this crime drama was polarizing upon release. Its Cannes premiere drew jeers and walkouts, but it also won the Palme d'Or. Other Lynch projects have found their audience over the years, but Wild at Heart has remained divisive. A trippy fantasy that's part road movie, part demented romance, and part Wizard of Oz tribute. Laura Dern and Nicolas Cage have a chaotic us-against-the-world chemistry as lovers Lula Fortune and Sailor Ripley, crisscrossing the country to get away from Lula's overbearing mother, played by Dern's real-life mom, Diane Ladd. The entire film is an unnerving odyssey of sex, gore, and brutality. Those are themes that Lynch explores often, but most of his other films have a method to the madness, and here, all that grimness threatens to take Wild at Heart off the road completely. Still, Dern is unforgettable as Lula, hotter than Georgia asphalt, and Cage sure knows how to rock a snakeskin jacket. Wild at Heart is not currently available to stream. Number 10 is from 1997, and it's Lost Highway. This noirish thriller is Lynch's original ode to Los Angeles, setting the stage for later projects like Inland Empire and Mulholland Drive. The twisty plot centers on saxophonist Fred Madison, played by Bill Pullman, who's sentenced to death for apparently murdering his wife, Renee, played by Patricia Arquette. But the man arrested and put in Fred's jail cell turns out to be someone else entirely. Auto mechanic Pete Dayton, played by Balthazar Getty, who's released and later begins an affair with an identical woman, also played by Arquette. Lost Highway plays with many of Lynch's favorite themes, from doppelgangers to dream sequences. Narratively, it's a messy murder mystery, but Lynch has always cared more about vibes than plot. Here he blends 90s paranoia and 40s noir to create a timeless effect. Plus, Lost Highway boasts one of the most unnerving scenes in all of Lynch's oeuvre. Robert Blake, caked in white makeup, purring, "We've met before, haven't we?" Number 9 is from 1999. It's The Straight Story. The only David Lynch movie streaming on Disney Plus, The Straight Story can seem like an outlier in the director's body of work. There are no demons, dimensional portals, or explorations of sexual abuse. But the based-on-a-true-story interstate tractor journey undertaken by Alvin Straight, played by Richard Farnsworth, to visit his dying brother is full of deep emotions. Between Alvin's painful memories, Angelo Badalamenti's soaring score, and cinematographer Freddie Francis's images of Midwestern farms, The Straight Story plays like a beautiful elegy for an America that no longer exists. And its story about forgiveness and endurance feels like an illustration of what the White Lodge really is. We can watch The Straight Story on Disney+. Inland Empire is from 2006 and it's number 8 on the list. Depending on how you categorize Twin Peaks: The Return, Inland Empire is still the most recent feature film directed by David Lynch. 16 years would seem like an unbearably long time to wait were it not for the fact that we're still processing it. The movie's quixotic storytelling, full of tangents and rabbit holes, both literal and metaphorical, remains one of the most prescient depictions of life on the internet, and the in-your-face awkwardness of digital video makes a perfect combination with Lynch's exploration of human darkness. This is definitely the performance that should have won Laura Dern her Oscar. We can watch Inland Empire on the Criterion Channel. Number 7 on the list is The Elephant Man from 1980. Although one of the few Lynch films not written by the director himself, The Elephant Man is actually a perfect follow-up to Eraserhead. Where the earlier film explores a parent dealing with the birth of an unexpected, unwanted child, The Elephant Man dives into what it's like to be that lonely, misfit child growing up in an uncaring world. The acting is superb. John Hurt's performance as the titular tragic figure is one for the ages, while Anthony Hopkins' role is an early career highlight. And the makeup is so good that the Academy was pushed to finally create an Oscar for Best Makeup and Hairstyling. Now, that's a legacy. We can watch Elephant Man on Pluto TV. Eraserhead is next at number 6 from 1977. Parenthood has never seemed so horrifying. Lynch's 1977 debut feature is a cornerstone of surrealist film, notorious for its inscrutability and macabre imagery. Despite its indecipherable reputation Eraserhead actually has a deceptively simple plot. Henry Spencer, played by Jack Nance, rocking an I just stuck my hand in an electrical socket hairdo, lives in a bleak industrial city where his girlfriend, played by Charlotte Stewart, gives birth to a monstrous creature. After she leaves, Henry is stuck caring for the child, journeying through dream sequences and haunting visions, women singing in radiators, men's heads popping off. With its striking black and white cinematography and minimal dialogue, Eraserhead feels like a nightmarish silent film accompanied by unsettling sound design. It's not Lynch's best movie, but it's certainly unforgettable, like a dream that lingers long after you wake up. We can watch Eraserhead on Max. Number 5, Twin Peaks Fire Walk With Me from 1992. Many of Lynch's films take a circular story approach where key elements happen off-screen and viewers must fill in the blanks. Twin Peaks Fire Walk With Me, which serves as a prequel to the canceled Too Soon series, is a rare exception where the director forces the audience to gaze straight into the heart of darkness. It's a lot to take in, which may be why Fire Walk With Me was derided as one of the worst movies ever made upon release. With the benefit of time and the show's recent revival, we can appreciate the film's dark surrealism and its uncompromising approach to difficult, important material. Originally cast just to play a dead body and an old photograph, Cheryl Lee brings Laura Palmer to life here in a soul-bearing performance unlike any other, and dare we say, we like this Donna better. We can watch Twin Peaks Fire Walk With Me on Max. Number 4 is from 2001, it's Mulholland Drive. This now iconic drama famously started as a failed TV show before Lynch reimagined it for the big screen. Today, it's hard to envision Mulholland Drive as anything but a film, a twisty, enigmatic tale that gets to the very heart of Hollywood dreams. Things start simple enough, centering on Naomi Watts' doe-eyed ingenue as she moves to Los Angeles to pursue stardom, only to cross paths with an amnesiac woman played by Laura Harring. But the film soon morphs into a wider portrait of Hollywood, from the glitziest heights to the seediest underbelly. The scenes behind Winky's diner dumpster remains one of the scariest moments ever put to film. All of Mulholland Drive has an unsettling ethereal quality, amplified by composer Angelo Badalamenti's score. Los Angeles has never felt like more of a dream or more of a nightmare. We can watch Mulholland Drive on Amazon Prime Video to rent. Our number 3 item, Twin Peaks from 1990 to 1991. Countless TV shows in the last 3 decades has tried to rip it off, but there will never be another series quite like Twin Peaks. Lynch and co-creator Mark Frost crafted a murder mystery for the ages, a sprawling portrait of a small Pacific Northwest town and its odd inhabitants. The show itself is impossible to categorize, part winking soap opera parody, part whodunit, part surrealist meditation on the nature of evil. But when it premiered on ABC in 1990, millions of viewers tuned in, obsessively following FBI agent Dale Cooper, played by a perfect Kyle MacLachlan, as he investigated who killed Laura Palmer, played by Cheryl Lee. Together, Lynch and Frost make for an ideal creative match, blending quirky small-town drama with unearthly horror. Not every episode was a winner. Lynch stepped away for much of season 2, and the back half is famously hard to slog through, but the highs easily outweigh the lows, and decades later, Twin Peaks still stands as one of the greatest TV shows ever made. We can watch Twin Peaks on Paramount+. Number two, Twin Peaks, The Return in 2017. Is it a TV show or is it a movie? Cinephiles will likely be debating this distinction for years to come. Mostly, it's a testament to how the second coming of Twin Peaks managed to upend our expectations of what TV could be all over again. Where the original series kickstarted the type of passionate pop culture discourse that we all know and love today, Twin Peaks The Return redefined what a TV revival could look and feel like. It also plays like a summation of Lynch's whole career, with almost all of his previous films referenced in some way, literally, visually, metaphorically, and yet it still managed to end with an all-new host of head-scratching questions. What year is this? We can watch Twin Peaks The Return on Showtime. And the number one item on the list from 1986, it's Blue Velvet. Lynch has always been fascinated by hidden darkness, the rotten underbelly lurking beneath a bed of roses. Blue Velvet is his masterpiece, a disturbing portrait of how true evil can hide beneath suburban banality. Kyle MacLachlan, a longtime Lynch favorite, is clean-cut college student Jeffrey Beaumont, who discovers a severed ear near his home. His investigation leads him to singer Dorothy Valens, played by Isabella Rossellini, and he's soon dragged into a sadistic criminal world, even as he starts a chaste romance with neighbor Sandy, played by Laura Dern in one of her earliest roles. In some ways, it's one of Lynch's most straightforward films, or at least as straightforward as a film can be when it features Dennis Hopper huffing gas and Dean Stockwell lip-syncing to Roy Orbison. But even amidst all that brutality, there's a tender hopefulness to Blue Velvet, an optimistic belief that sometimes light really can overpower the darkness. That paragraph was written by one of the writers, and then this is written by the other one. What else is there to say about a movie that feels so personal, so Freudian, so attuned to how easily viewers can become voyeurs? Well, it's perfect, for one thing. Coming off the critical and commercial flop of Dune, Blue Velvet crystallized what have since become the director's signature aesthetic and favorite themes: evil lurking behind velvet cabaret curtains, bugs eating at the roots of grass. Of all the 80s movies that looked back at the 50s, Blue Velvet endures for its exquisite understanding of the American obsession with sex and violence. We can watch Blue Velvet on Max. Those are David Lynch's best movies and TV shows ranked, and it was by Devin Coggan and Christian Haloub. This is new information. Donald Trump announces Mel Gibson, Sylvester Stallone, and John Voight as special ambassadors to Hollywood. No, this isn't the cast of the next Expendables movie. This is by Wesley Stenzel. Mel Gibson, Sylvester Stallone, and John Voight have booked new roles in Donald Trump's fold. The three actors were part of a puzzling announcement the once and future president made via Truth Social on Thursday. It is my honor to announce John Voight, Mel Gibson, and Sylvester Stallone to be special ambassadors to a great but very troubled place, Hollywood, California, Trump wrote. What does that mean? They will serve as special envoys to me for the purpose of bringing Hollywood, which has lost much business over the last 4 years, to foreign countries, back, bigger, better, and stronger than ever before, Trump explained. These three very talented people will be my eyes and ears, and I will get done what they suggest. It will be like the United States of America itself, the golden age of Hollywood. Gibson, who lost his Malibu home in the ongoing Palisades wildfire, tells Entertainment Weekly that he didn't know about the position until Trump announced it. I got the tweet at the same time as all of you and was just as surprised, he says. Nevertheless, I heed the call. My duty as a citizen is to give any help and insight I can, Any chance the position comes with an ambassador's residence? Voight expressed his appreciation in a statement to Entertainment Weekly. I'm old enough to have touched some years of the golden age of Hollywood, and I've seen its slow deterioration since. Today, we are in pretty bad shape. Very few films are made here now, but we are fortunate to have an incoming president who wants to restore Hollywood to its former glory. And with his help, I feel we can get that done. Now we have been through these horrible fires and our spirits are down, but we are resilient. We will help each other and we will rebuild. Love to everyone across the nation who has come to our aid. Representatives for Stallone and Trump did not immediately respond to Entertainment Weekly's request for comment. It was not immediately clear what these special ambassadors, or is it special envoys, will actually do over the next 4 years, as the position has not appeared in previous administrations, and ambassadors typically represent the United States in areas outside the country. However, there have been numerous special envoy positions that aren't strictly international, specializing in fields like LGBTQI+ rights, climate, counterterrorism, hostage affairs, and lawful migration. Gibson, Stallone, and Voight have all been fervent Trump supporters. Gibson, from Lethal Weapon and Mad Max, railed against Vice President Kamala Harris in October as she campaigned for president, claiming she had the IQ of a fence post. He never officially endorsed Trump or explicitly confirmed who he voted for in the 2024 election, but said that assuming he'd cast his vote for Trump was a pretty good guess. Gibson also saluted Trump at a UFC event in 2021 and was seen chatting with the former president at another UFC event in 2023. Stallone, from Rocky and Rambo, referred to Trump as the second George Washington and a mythical character in a congratulatory speech in November. He previously supported Republican John McCain during his presidential run in 2008. Voight, known for Midnight Cowboy and Ray Donovan, is one of the most outspoken Republicans in Hollywood. He spoke at Trump's inauguration in 2017 and has repeatedly praised the president-elect and his policies, even calling him the greatest president since Abraham Lincoln. The trio of Hollywood ambassadors aren't the only entertainment figures working with Trump. In November, the president-elect announced that he'd selected TV's Dr. Mehmet Oz to run the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. Other media personalities involved in the forthcoming Trump administration include Fox and Friends host Pete Hegseth, who received the nomination for Secretary of Defense, and Fox Business's The Bottom Line co-host Sean Duffy, a Real World Boston alum who's been tapped for Secretary of Transportation. That was Donald Trump announces Mel Gibson, Sylvester Stallone, and John Voight as special ambassadors to Hollywood, and it was by Wesley Stenzel. And this one feels almost like a public service announcement. Brad Pitt is not messaging fans for money, Rep warns after French woman loses life savings in scam. This is also by Wesley Stenzel. Brad Pitt fans are being warned about scammers after a French woman purportedly lost $850,000 and her marriage after falling prey to AI images and fake messages impersonating the actor. It's awful that scammers take advantage of fans' strong connection with celebrities, a spokesperson for the Moneyball star tells Entertainment Weekly. But this is an important reminder to not respond to unsolicited online outreach, especially from actors who have no social media presence. That statement echoes a similar comment Entertainment Weekly received upon reports of another Pitt-related scam in September. The victim of the most recent episode, a 53-year-old French interior designer named Anne, first detailed her experience in an interview with 7-8 on France's TF1 channel, France 24 reports. Anne said she was first contacted by a figure claiming to be Pitt's mother on Instagram. She told me that her son needed someone like me, Anne said. A few days later, an account claiming to be Pitt himself reached out. At first, I said to myself that it was fake, that it's ridiculous, Anne told TF1. But I'm not used to social media, and I didn't really understand what was happening to me. The scammers told Anne that Pitt needed funds to cover his kidney treatment, which he could not pay for himself due to his divorce proceedings freezing his bank accounts. To convince Anne that the real Pitt was behind the account, the scammers sent doctored and AI-generated images of the actor in a hospital bed to verify his identity. Upon believing she and Pitt were in a romantic relationship, Anne ultimately sent the scammers $850,000 and also divorced her husband so she could pursue Pitt. "I was in love with the man I was chatting to," she said on 7-8, per The Guardian. "He knew how to speak to a woman." Anne only realized her mistake when she saw news of Pitt's real-life romance with Inez de Ramon, and she ultimately filed a police report over the scam. "I ask myself why they chose me to do such harm like this," she told 7-8. "I never harmed anyone. These people deserve hell." After prompting a wave of memes and mockery, TF1 pulled the 7-8 episode from circulation to prevent further cyberbullying. The network reported that Anne had experienced mental health difficulties, including depression. In September 2024, Spain's Interior Ministry announced that 5 online scammers had been arrested for defrauding 2 women out of $350,000 for impersonating Pitt. It was not immediately clear if the incidents in Spain and France are connected. The Wolf's actor recently reached a settlement from his divorce from Angelina Jolie, which had been the subject of lengthy legal proceedings dating back to 2016, when the Maleficent star accused Pitt of abuse. The FBI investigated Jolie's claims regarding Pitt's abuse and ultimately dropped the case without pursuing any charges, per the AP. That was Brad Pitt is not messaging fans for money, Rep warns after Frenchwoman loses life savings in scam, and it was by Wesley Stenzel. This is a good time to end the show, and it's a good lesson for us to always be on the lookout and be cautious of emails or texts or messages from people we don't know. I'm volunteer reader Diane Salisbury, and you are listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona. This has been Entertainment Weekly magazine, and I've been reading from their website, EW.com. Please come back next week, and we'll cover more of what the current news is in entertainment. And until then, goodbye.